Halton here. At MSA, our health and safety drives them to develop advanced safety equipment with performance and protection in perfect balance, like Globe Athletics, the latest innovation in turnout gear. Developed as athletic gear for firefighters, Athletics uses unique stretch fabrics that provide body contoured fit for unprecedented range of motion and flexibility. It's lighter weight, less bulky, and provides the protection you need from your turnout gear. Get the full story at msafire.com/globe.
I've been told by everybody up on this roof that they're all off the roof. I am on the roof of Exposure 4. Got fire through the roof of the fire building and the entire rear section.
Now, remember, given the mayday, has he been accounted for? Okay.
610B, that was the mayday. 610B.
I'm here. We got a fire. 1.5-story, single-family dwelling. Fire shown from the second floor. Give me a second alarm on this.
Up to the top floor. I got people hanging out the top floor windows with a baby.
Commercial building. A lot of fire, a lot of smoke. Go ahead and strike a third alarm on my orders on this.
Got people on the front fire escape here with windows vented below them. We need somebody up there.
Yeah, let them know we got a job. I'm pulling up now. Second alarm, I got a 1-story single-family frame, heavy fire showing from the attic.
So we're using all hands. We got one line stretch, fire on the fourth floor, second line being stretched, primary stretches are underway.
Welcome to our Fire Engineering Podcast, The Command Post. I'm Chief Rick Lasky, along with my best buddy, Chief John Salka, and we've got another great show lined up for you today. John, we've been knocking them out, rescheduling classes. I know I'm back out there. I've been doing a bunch. Everybody seems to be they're firefighters. We overcome all kinds of things, but everybody's been social distancing in the classroom just fine. And people don't want, hey, everybody has enough room to sit apart, you know, and do that. But a lot of other people just get off shift. They're like, I've been working with these guys 24 hours, you know, they still sit close. But everybody else has been, I think they've been doing a really good job, buddy.
I mean, so do I. I think the strangest thing about this whole COVID is how differently it's affecting different neighborhoods and different states and different jobs, different careers, you know, the way, for example, I've said this about 10 times in the past 2 weeks, New York City Fire Department's 11,000 people working in, you know, well over 250 stations in groups of 6 or 12 or 15. I can't speak for everyone, but everybody I speak to says in the firehouse, most guys don't wear masks. They're together all the time, every three shifts, every 3 days, whatever it is. Yet nobody has died. No FDNY firefighter has died from COVID. Some EMTs have, and some medical people have, and some fire inspectors were sick, and I think one may have passed. But my whole point is, there's a finite closed group of 11,000 people in the biggest city in the world that had some of the highest death rates for the COVID. And these guys even responded, you know, respond out there and dealing with civilians and all sorts of people. Yet they were largely untouched by the whole thing. And I find that amazing, you know, that the fire service is not, or even the EMS service. My wife belongs to the local voluntary EMS. And it's not like half the people are out. You know, I mean, they did lose a guy. They lost my neighbor, actually. Sal Mancuso passed. He was killed. He's 68 years old. He died from COVID. But he's one of the only people in the whole county, you know, in emergency services. So anyway, my whole point was it just, you know, strains my mind to try and put this in perspective with the general population the way they are. You know, and again, the numbers are being reported by all different organizations on all different things. How many more people tested positive? How many more people have? Now, if you tested positive, do you have the disease? I don't know if that's what that means. Or if you tested positive with no symptoms, maybe you didn't really get it. You got it technically, but you had no symptoms. You didn't get sick, or you did get sick, but it wasn't a big deal. I've heard dozens of people say, yeah, I did have it. I apparently didn't know. I thought I just was a little sick 1 week, you know. So anyway, It's a gigantic situation that's affecting so many people, but it's also affecting so many people so differently that it's hard to put it's hard to look at it the same everywhere you go. It's almost like you got to treat it differently when you go to different places if you were inclined to travel.
Exactly, and not to downplay. I mean, there's been a lot of people have died from this. Sadly, tragically,
I mean, it's almost 200,000. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of them, not all of them, weren't, you and I are not doctors or scientists, but a lot of them had pre-existing, two to three other pre-existing medical things that made for a worse situation. But I got to say, when you and I talked about the other day, I'm just overwhelmed with how incredible the fire service is. Once again, John, throwing a whole nother gigantic curveball out of left, center, and right field. You know what I'm saying? And you know, the firefighters, they just go, what? It's like almost like, what else you want to throw us? Just throw us another challenge and we'll overcome this too. And I can't help but just brag on the fire service, because and obviously our EMS workers and our law enforcement and all those in the medical profession too. I don't want to forget them, and our emergency management people that are, you know, I forgot to mention it once before, and somebody kind of called me out, and I'm glad he did, because, you know, behind the scenes, a lot of emergency management people doing some pretty incredible stuff to make all this stuff happen. But firefighters, I just right now, I'm just going to say it just specifically to the firefighters. Thank you for what you do. You guys have been doing great. So, hey, John, again, we're doing our classes. We've got some great stuff coming up. We've got a company officer academy coming up in November in Spartanburg, and there's still seats available. Big room. They got plenty of room for social distancing. We posted on our websites. You can get a hold of them. Bunch of stuff coming up for us, but we got a ton back with CSU after the first of the year. And we've been doing the Zoom stuff. This is pretty cool. I just did one for our good buddy, Chief Paul Wagner, out in Washington and in the Seattle metro area, if you will, for his volunteers on Thursday night. Did a whole evening with them. I've done some recruits, some graduation, some academy classes. I know you have too, some officers meetings, which is kind of cool, because, you know, they put them all in the same training room. They all get their own table, and we get to do the big screen. So the Zoom stuff for you and I has been working out pretty good. You know, it's not what we want, but I know both of us have had a chance to visit with some people and do some classes. So I guess the message, buddy, would be, look, if you're concerned or you want to get your people some get them on board, some discussions, some training, some talks, give us a shout. John and I have been doing the Zoom stuff. We'd be happy to do it with you, with your staff or with your department. Or I did one, buddy, down in Pflugerville, down in Travis County ESD, one of the ESD departments down there. Great department. Heath, the training chief, what a great guy. Great chief down there. Growing leaps and bounds. Amazon's getting ready to build like a, I'm exaggerating, but it's like a 500 million square foot. It's like multi, it's going to be their biggest, their biggest distribution center in the world. The thing is like multiple floors. Great, great fire department, great people. And I had a group, John, in the classroom, and I had like 5-6 stations that we were Zoom, you know, we were televising out to. So, but to our viewers, or to our listeners, I'm sorry, listeners, tonight, if you're interested, give us a shout. John, I'd be happy to do some programs with you. If we can't make it out there, we'd be happy to do it with you over Zoom. So that'll take care of that. Check our Facebook posts. I know on my website calendar, prideocean.com, and my Facebook page, I post my classes and any class that I do with my best buddy, John Salko, so you can get some information there. But give us a shout if you're looking to do something, whether it's in person or Zoom, we'll make it happen. Hey, John, this is a topic that you and I get asked a lot for tonight's show, whenever you're listening to this, folks. You and I have talked about this plenty of time in classes, and we've talked a little bit in spurts on some of our other shows, whether it's the Command Post, like right now, or our old school podcast, but it's the whole public perception thing and expectations. I guess that'd be a good title for this one, public perception and expectations. You know, it's easy to talk tactics and strategy. It's easy to talk tools. It's easy to talk, you know, Mayday stuff and all written, all those different things. But I know you and I are on the same page with this, that quite often a lot of our officers don't visit the troops on this particular topic. On the public's perception, you always said perception is what?
Oh, I mean, there's no such thing as reality. There's only perception, right? I mean, perception is everything. It doesn't really matter what your intent was. If you say something that insults somebody, what did you do? You insulted them. It doesn't matter what you meant. It's the receiving end that determines whether something is, you know, valid or true or effective or whatever. So the problem with public perception is, and it's not really a problem. You know, the fire service is what? It's full of good people that work hard and are public servants and give of themselves. And you know, you heard all the praise of the Supreme Court justice, right, that just passed. And some of her quotes were about to live a life of service to others and how gratifying that is and how helpful it is to society. And if everybody did that, how society would develop better and work better. Anyway, having said that, we already know that. Everybody in the fire service already knows we're public service people and we're here to help everybody and Mrs. Smith and, you know, Brunicini's whole thing. However, sometimes we take it for granted. Sometimes we're so busy, you know, sort of like being the fire service. Oh, yeah, they know what we are. They know who we are. They know we're the fire service and that we're just kidding around and that we mean well. And, you know, even though we drove past them and they were sort of waving at us to come over. And so the point is, I think we have to pay some more conscious attention to, you know, the perception that people get from us based on what we're doing or what we're not doing or what we're saying and how we're saying it. And you know, you and I both know, and everybody who's listening to this is probably a firefighter. We know we like to kid around and mess around and joke and do stuff. And there are some things that we do that I think are absolutely out of line that we should never do out in public that might be fine with the apparatus door closed when you're kidding around with a new recruit or a guy on his last day. And some of those same exact things would be horrific to a family walking by looking into the apparatus floor and seeing it done.
And they're nothing illegal or dishonest. It's just the stuff. You know, the firehouse stuff, the innocent things that sometimes, you know, like you say, it's all about how it's being perceived. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So I think company officers, and again, it's not all about company officers, but this largely falls on the shoulders of company officers because they are the folks that are, well, let's face it. Those are the folks that are responsible. You and I, and for those of you listening, Rick and I talk and teach and travel. 80% of the stuff that we do is leadership, company officer, responsibility focused. And you know what? It's so true. It's company officers and senior firefighters and chief officers, the people that are in the driver's seat, the people that have said, pick me. I want to be in charge. I want to be the boss. You're the ones that have to set the tone. And you've told stories, Rick, and I've told stories in our classes, our company officer academy. We travel around the country doing that. And we always have a full class of hungry, meaning knowledge hungry, young, either about to be promoted or newly promoted officers who want to know what they can do and how they can do it better and what they shouldn't be doing. And what you shouldn't be doing is letting your firefighters just run the show and do what they want to do because, they're all good guys and they would never hurt anybody. And they didn't really mean that, Chief. And I've said to people, I know they really didn't mean it that way, but half the people that heard it thought of it that way. That makes it that way. And that makes it something you're going to have to fix or repair or maybe next time think about ahead of time, you know. So I've been guilty of it myself as a young officer, saying things that you thought would be pretty funny to a group. And half the group is frowning when you're done and you realize, well, I guess they didn't get it, you know. So, again, public perception is very important because we are public servants.
I know we're not talking necessarily – we're talking leadership in a roundabout way on how you – another aspect of being a boss, being a leader, making sure your people are doing the right thing so the public doesn't think wrong of us. But let's talk about that, Lieutenant and Company Officer. You've said this for years. I know I have as well. When you pin those collar pins on, your life changed. You're not one of the boys or girls anymore. You're now over there cutting up. I mean, I guess every level you've talked about, every level is like, all right, well, I have to be careful what I say because I'm like right in the front seat now. All right, they pinned a second trumpet on me. I really have to watch what I'm saying now. Now they're golden across. I really have to watch what I'm saying now. The higher
and you know what? And you know, you love that story I tell, right? And I'm going to tell it again. And I've told it on this show when we talked about other issues before, but I'll tell it again because I think it's a great story. Not because it's my story, but because I think a lot of people have probably lived the same experience. You know, as a young firefighter, I don't want to say I was a loudmouth because I really wasn't, but I jumped in wherever I could when funny stuff was going on or when somebody was, you know, somebody was being not picked on, but selected for that day. You know, a guy comes in with a black eye or a guy comes in and somebody's like, oh, what happened? Your wife punched you in the eye or the nose or whatever. But my point was, as a firefighter, I would jump in on that. And it's pretty much not anything goes, but firefighters are pretty rough around a kitchen table, you know. And then I made a lieutenant. I remember being a brand new lieutenant. I was still a young man on the job, but I was a brand new lieutenant. And now I felt the weight of those collar pins on my shoulders. because now some joking was going on at the lunch table that I was dying to jump in on, and I might have even thrown a comment out to him because I was still just a junior boss. I was still just a young boss, a young lieutenant. So I sort of still fit in a little bit. And then a couple of years later, I made captain, more than a couple, but a few years later, I made captain. And in the FDNY, I have firefighters, lieutenants, captain, and battalion chief. So now you make captain, you're above lieutenants, you're supervising lieutenants, right, and firefighters, and there's a little bit more responsibility there. And I slowed down even more. There were times where I might have said something as a lieutenant, and I just let it pass because now I'm the captain. Now I'm the company commander sitting at the table. There might be a lieutenant across the table and 8 or 10 firefighters sitting there. And there were times where I just passed. I just had a really good one to drop on a guy, and I just passed, you know, because I thought, gee, that might be a little rough coming from the captain, you know. And then I made battalion chief, and that was it. I just zipped it up. I just closed the circus tent and just sat there and ate my lunch and giggled under my breath when somebody said something pretty funny. And when I was finished with lunch, got up, scraped my plate, and went back up to the office, you know, because I realized now I'm battalion chief, and I'm really not in a position to be busting some young firefighter who's 22 years old, half my age, you know, busting his chops about something that happened with his girlfriend or having a car crash the day before it, you know, in the firehouse parking lot, he banged into somebody's car or something. And so that gradual abandonment of the kidding around attitude that I experienced, I think it's a great piece of advice for others. And for those of you that are listening that are maybe young company officers and maybe thinking about continuing up the chain, or even if you're a young company officer and you think someday you're going to be an older company officer, you know what? There's some things you just have to sort of step out of. There's some things you just have to sort of listen to and laugh as it happens. Or maybe even, we've all done it, turn on your heels and walk away and go get a cup of coffee and let the rest of it unfold on the apparatus floor. Maybe it'll be funnier to the rest of them without you. Maybe they get stuff that they're not saying because you're standing there. You know what I'm saying? So the point is, you're an influential person in the firehouse. You're an influential person with your crew. And whether it's not saying anything, or maybe even saying, hey, guys, that's a little rough. Huh? The guy just crashed his car yesterday. Go easy on him. You know, sometimes you can even step in and lighten the load a little bit if you think it's necessary.
Well, and I think more people, when they get promoted, I guess it just gets easy and kind of the routine to pin your collar pins on and go to the fire or go to work, or when you get there and you forget what those represent. And like you've said 1,000 times, you know, you're not firefighter Lasky anymore. You're captain or chief, whatever. And you are looked at, whether you believe it or not, whether you're just there with your 3 or 4 guys and gals, they look at you differently. You're one of the bosses. And now all of a sudden it's not just firefighter Smith saying something. It's Captain Smith saying something. It carries that weight. And, you know, so spin that, you know, all right, we got to watch what we're saying, you know, again, in how we conduct ourselves as company officers. You've told this story, and I like this. When a little old lady comes across the street in the Bronx, I think it was in the Bronx, and says, hey, you know, who's in charge?
Great story. You know, Lieutenant Smithwick, Lieutenant Jones, Lieutenant Water, to the apparatus floor, we have somebody at the front door. And there at the front door is, like you said, a little old lady lives across the street from the firehouse. She ambled her way across the street to knock on the door to talk to. She wants to talk to the boss. She doesn't even know the boss in the fire department is called an officer. She said, can I please speak to who's in charge here? Sure, ma'am. Come on in. You know, and that's how they talk, very nicely. It's a civilian. It's an older woman, respectfully. They call the officer down. Yeah, hi, ma'am. What's the problem? What can I do for you? He didn't even say, really, what's the problem? Not necessarily a problem. She might be coming over to say, thank you for not beeping the horn at night while we go to sleep or whatever, right? So she says, you know what? Are you the man in charge? Yes. Well, I sure am. What can I do for you? Well, she says, I've lived across the street for 48 years, my husband and I, and this firehouse has been there much longer than that. And I've never seen any cars parked on that hydrant, this hydrant right here in front of the firehouse. I've never seen any cars parked on it. And the last couple of weeks, there's been a few cars parked on that hydrant, like right now. And there we are standing at the front door, and she points to the car, and there's a car on that hydrant right now. I said, well, that certainly is a problem. And I thank you for coming over here and letting us know, because we don't want that to be a problem, you know? So we're looking at it. And of course I recognize it right away. It's a firefighter's car. Of course, nobody else would park on a hydrant in front of a firehouse, right? One of the firefighters parked there, and I've seen it done, frankly, many times in many places, because we're there. We figure we can overcome that problem. We know the hydrant's blocked. It's our car. We break the guy's windows and put a hose through if it was at a fire down the block, right? But if it's our car, it's okay. I said, Tommy, Tommy Williams, is that your car? Yeah, Lou. I said, you're gonna have to move it. It's blocking a hydrant. This lady from across the street was kind enough to come over and point it out to us. You know, and some of the guys are giggling a little bit because it's sort of funny. But you know what? What are we doing? We're rolling over. We got caught. We got caught doing something that we know we allow ourselves to do, even though it's wrong. But somebody in the public perception has now picked it up. And now they're looking at it saying, hey, that's not right, is it? And the answer is, no, it's not. Tommy, you're going to have to move your car. So, you know what ended up happening was the captain ended up putting the thing saying, no parking on the hydrant. That lady's not moving. She's been there for 48 years. You can't move it today and park there tomorrow, right? So public perception is important. And sometimes the requirements, sometimes the things that we have to do to not please public perception, but to make the right impression on people is sometimes we have to change. Sometimes we have to do things a little bit differently maybe than we've been doing it or than we'd like to do.
Well, and how we carry ourselves, that because that little lady is not just going to go home, crawl into her little apartment and just sit there. You know, 99 times out of 100, they go back and she tells her husband, you know, I went and talked to the fire department finally, and the captain was, I guess he's a captain, he's in charge, nice guy. Oh, he's seeing to take care. And they tell their neighbors and they tell their relatives and they tell their kids and their grandkids and they go to the market, and they tell the people the market and the ripple effects, right? I mean, we get killed off on more bad stuff because of the ripple effects. And then what happens as anything, the story gets worse and worse and worse and worse the further out it goes. And before you know it, she went across the street and some captain got in her face and said, I don't care who you are, old lady, you get back and mind your own. And that's not what, you know, so what you did was so huge because, again, it image, what we do, it just travels like forever. You know, it's the dollar bill.
Two things you got to remember about. The first one is the one you just brought up, that it travels. And it's not 1956 anymore. It's 2020. And maybe it's not a 60-year-old or a 70-year-old or an 80-year-old woman. Maybe it's a 32-year-old woman that lives across the street and just moved in last week with her husband. Hi, guys. Listen, my husband and I just moved in, and gosh, my dad's a firefighter. He said nobody should ever be on a hydrant. I'm worried about this car. Now, you fix that. You verbally fix that. You move that car and make her feel good. She's online. She's on Facebook. She's on Twitter. 20,000 people within 24 hours get the little picture that she didn't. And maybe she says, oh, can I get a picture with you guys in front of the firehouse? And maybe she'll send that out with a big smile. Oh, these firefighters were nice enough to move a car off a hydrant across from my apartment. I feel so good. My dad was a firefighter, and I know they all care so much about us. All of a sudden, boom, look at the gigantic positive impact you've had on the fire service and our public image just from doing the right thing and knowing that it's 2020 and it's not just her calling Mabel on the phone or her calling her dad saying, hey, Dad, I had a great thing happen today. Although she might do that, it goes out all over the place. The second point I want to make about that is what you're doing.
That's a great point. Because social media, with those that are not maybe as elderly that don't mess with that stuff, is huge. Right. And what would you rather have posted out there? Would you rather have the picture of the car sitting in a hydrant and go, look at every day they park this, and if that was my car, they'd be putting a ticket on it. Instead, you
put a fireman sticker on it. God forbid a picture of the hydrant, car in a hydrant, and it looks like a fireman sticker too. And don't – another related point that I just sort of came to me is the public is very smart. And I'm not saying the public wasn't very smart, but 10 years, 20, 30, 40 years ago, what we said went. What we said – was the rule. People went to the, Billy, why don't you go ask the firefighters to see what they say? Oh, you should never do that. Oh, they should. They said we should never do. Now people question stuff. I'm not talking about the big protests and all that, which is still attached to it. But this is 2020 now. People question stuff. And you know what else they do? They look it up on Google.
Oh, yeah.
They look it up on Google. Cars parked on hydrants. City law. This and that and the other thing. You know, fire trucks visiting stores. Is that people Google everything now? They know the answer before they even come to you. They know you're doing something wrong. Not like years ago, they'd say, "Gee, oh no, honey, we're allowed. Firefighters are allowed to park in the hydrant because we're right here and we're going to protect the neighborhood." Oh, okay, that's all right. And they'd walk away, and we'd feel good about that. You ain't getting away with that in 2020. You know?
Oh no, you're not at all. And here's the thing with that. All right, spin that a little bit outside the firehouse, the grocery store trips. We've talked about this before. You know, and I had some great mayors, especially in Louisville. Oh my God, I had some in Coeur d'Alene. I had an incredible mayor, Steve Judy, and then in Louisville, Mayor Gene Carey and Mayor Dean Euchert for me, and then Rudy Durham, incredible mayors. And I remember when I first got there, John, you've heard me tell a story. The mayor was like, "Now, Chief, I better not see those fire engines or ambulances at the grocery stores." And I'm like, "Mayor, you know, I would never disrespect you. I respect you. I admire you, but our guys have to eat too. If you're going to tell me that, then you have to go tell the police chief that his patrol officer is not allowed to have breakfast, lunch, or dinner while I'm doing it." He goes, "Well, that's different." I said, well, really, it isn't. Why are our guys supposed to bring stuff from home? They're there for 24 hours. And, you know, we've all talked about this over and over again. And you've heard me. I actually did a blog on a while back. But what's so wrong with going to the grocery store on duty? Just don't park in the fire lane, you know, unless you have to. Because my thing is, unless there's nowhere else to park, which usually is not the case, don't make my phone extension in my office ring. Don't give the public, don't give someone that's just driving around looking for a reason to complain, just to go off on us. Park in the parking lot, walk your ass in, or leave somebody at the rig, or what do you have to do, and so on and so forth. Unless you're there in a call, park and walk in. I've got no problem with that. And we even did a PSA on it for cable and all that about how we're still available and we have to eat and all that stuff, so on and so forth. And it gives us a chance even more so. You know, you're walking in and some mom and dad are walking out their kid and, "Oh my God, it's the firefighters, the fire." And what is one of you guys, he goes, Hey, Cap, I'm going to go. All right, go ahead. And the next thing you know, they got the kid on the rig and a little red fire helmet on him and all this stuff. And they seize another opportunity, like you said, to make another relationship with the public or further another relationship with the public. That being said, you know, there's so many ways not to turn this into just going to the grocery store, but how to make that, turn that into a positive experience or view for the public. Do you remember the video, John, out of Butte County, California? Do you remember the guys are putting the groceries on the engine and there's a civilian and he is just ripping them, cussing them. He's like, "I cannot believe," and remember this guy, he's going on and on and on. And there's some guy filming. He turned around, calling the guy filming an asshole and this and that. And this guy was just, oh God, just going off on these guys.
He was a rough character. Yeah.
Oh, and do you remember the captain? Do you remember the company officer? He just very calmly, very professional.
Smooth as silk.
Oh, they just kept exactly smooth as all. And putting the grocery bags on the engine, and he said, "Yes, sir. Yes, I understand, sir." And he's explaining. He goes, "Look, sir, if you have a complaint, you can go to our website or call it, fill out. Someone will follow it up where we take these very seriously." And this guy was just relentless on him. He just kept beating up on him. "And why are you here? And I followed you and all this stuff," and so on and so forth. Now, first of all, every single recruit firefighter and every single newly promoted company officer should watch that video.
Yeah.
Then you should pick up the phone or send a text message or a post on Facebook to the Butte County, California, that fire department for what their professionalism and what they did. What an absolute incredible teaching moment, learning, experience for someone to watch how to conduct yourself. Forget the grocery store. If anyone's chewing your ass out, how to conduct yourself with the public, which they have a right to come and get in our face and complain. Now, that being said, we know the story. I think the story was, John, the guy wasn't really mad about them being at the grocery store. I think, if I remember the story right, they had just raised their taxes or fire tax or whatever. And so he was on the hunt. He was driving around looking for anything that was red, doing anything wrong. And he saw these guys at his grocery store. Somebody said, "Well, there's another grocery store closer," whatever the story.
And the important point is it doesn't matter why he's mad. If he's mad and he's a taxpayer and wearing a blue uniform on a red fire engine, guess what? We got to treat them right. We got to be polite. We got to be respectful. We got to try and talk calmly. And we've said this before, the more terribly people treat you, the more calm you have to stay. You can't end up in a yell and screaming match with somebody when you're in uniform on duty. You look foolish. And I'll tell you, depending on where you work, that could cost you some money, or I don't think it could really cost you your job, but it could certainly be dangerous to your job, you know?
Exactly. So it goes back, you know, we're talking public perception here, you know, how they view us and what's helping us, but really at times is hurting us, John. And you and I both love YouTube. We both love the internet. We both love, you know, we do Facebook, we do Twitter, we do all the social media stuff with our jobs to keep up, well, to keep up with family, but also to keep up what we're doing. But it's like this constant reminder we have to be sent out to the troops, right? That, hey, the public's not just watching. They're holding that thing up in their hand and they're videotaping you. And as fast as I can say videotape, they're pushing a button and they're posting it to Instagram and to Snapchat and to Facebook and to Twitter and all this stuff. And we used to say, you know, a picture, you know, paints 1,000 words or whatever it says. And you can't really go by a picture sometimes because there's a whole other story to it you're not seeing. Well, same with some of the videos. There's things that went on before they started videotaping that aren't explained in the actual footage, and the actual footage makes us look bad. My whole point is if you're a boss, try to make sure you and your crews never put you in that position to have people pointing fingers. And if you're a firefighter, and John, you've heard me say this in class. We always say this, but because we teach so much together, but how many times that I've ever seen our guys, great, great firefighters in Louisville, Texas, right? They're an I-35E for an accident. Ambulance is gone. They've swept up. There's nothing else to do. They're just waiting on the wreckers to get there, haul the cars off. They got to sit there because there's a couple of hazards. And, you know, they're sitting on the center median or the concrete wall, or they're leaning against the rig, and everybody who's delayed going to work, picking up their kids from childcare, trying to get to the airport, whatever, by the time they see the red lights for a while, and as they get closer and closer, they're expected to see, you know, all this action. And here's these firefighters sitting there leaning against the bumper of the rig. Now, you know, is that wrong? No, it's not wrong that, you know, you're just waiting for the tow truck to come and haul the cars off. But man, I told you this, my police chief, when I was a cop, John, he'd come up to me at a couple scenes when the media was there. He goes, "Hey, officer, hands in his pockets." And I, what he goes, "Come here, officer, hands in his pockets." I go, "What?" I go, "What, boss?" He goes, "Look at all, don't ever have your hands in your pockets." I go, he goes, "No." He goes, "Right now." And he was, John, as he was talking to me, he was pointing like he was explaining something about that. He said, "Don't ever, you know what you do if you see the media? Every now and then, go up, talk to a partner and point and talk and don't laugh and don't smile because they're putting it on television. Don't get caught standing with your hands in your pocket. Don't get caught, you know." And I'll never forget that when the whole officer hands in his pockets. And I'm like, "What?" He's like, "No." And there's been times, John, I've seen myself on news footage. I remember one, I was talking to a couple of my guys at an incident, you know, we're wrapped, you know, kind of on the downside of it. The fire's knocked on, the media's there filming, and I'm pointing and doing my thing, and we were talking about the Dallas Stars hockey team. You think the Stars could take it? Well, you know what? You see how they played last, you know, the other night? It had nothing to do with the fire. It's like the coach calling timeout, going out to talk to the pitcher who's struggling. "Hey, John, what's going on?" I don't know, Skipper. I'm doing my best." "Okay, well, hey, you see the guy in the fourth row? That's like his fifth hot dog, that guy." "I know, he got mustard all over his face." You know, and they're talking. Now, the cameras are like, "Oh, they're having a pretty intense conversation about there. He can't find a strike zone right now." They're not even talking about the strike zone. They're talking about the guy eating hot dogs in the fifth row. Same thing. You know, how you post yourself, how you present at that accident scene, at that fire. John, this is the other thing that we brought up before. You're at a fire, someone's home, someone's business. It's the adrenaline rush we all feel, right? We're all just fired up. We just had a job. We did this. And there's that nervous laughter, I'll call it that, or that laughter, that joking, or the whistling, or whatever. And, you know, I remember us bringing one of my assistants, she's bringing the family into their house. After everything's clear, we let the guys know. And I'm standing there. He's kind of walking around explaining what happened. And you can hear the guys in the next room overhauling. They're laughing and all this stuff. And I could see their faces. And I'm like, "Look, they just lost their house or a lot of their house. And you're in there laughing." Or, you know what I'm saying? "Don't spit on the floor." It's ruined. That was an hour ago. Their kids were playing with their toys on that floor. Right. And this is their home. Right. This is their, you know, that's not just their car that burned up. That's not their garage. It's just, you know, it's their stuff.
Even more minor stuff, like in my whole career, I don't think I ever saw a firefighter at the scene of an incident, even after it was over, like smoking a cigarette, walking around smoking. You know what I'm saying? I always thought smoking was just sort of like out of bounds at the scene of anything. So walking around at the scene of a car crash, waiting for the tow to come and stuff like that. Guys sitting on a guardrail smoking a cigarette. I always said, just try and just try and maintain a really above standard, above board image at the scene, especially scenes where the lights are on and the rigs are going. Professional, look like you're doing something. And it's just, number one, it's easy. And number two, if it comes out of the officer, if the officer's the one guiding it, suggesting it, most of the time it's going to work just fine.
Well, and how many times have you watched the news and they're at like a multiple shooting or a homicide or something, the media stand up there filming, and both you and I are very pro law enforcement. We support our brothers and sisters, and your daughter-in-law's police officer. We support law enforcement. But you see one of them, you know, because that's their job. It's your job. You're doing your job, and somebody says something or you hear something, it just catches you funny. You catch yourself smiling for a second, not even laughing outright. But that's what the video that the news is filming captures. And I'm not saying you got to walk around all like serious face and head down and all that stuff, but you got to remember, folks, who's watching, what they're videotaping. That video, that picture is going to be out there for like a gazillion years, man. And it's going to get different play from different people. I'd rather have, I love the videos that show us taking care of the conversation, John, you had with the little old lady come across about the car. If that was now people were filming, you know, imagine the great footage, you know, here's the little hug you give her afterwards, and, or she gives you a hug and it's like, oh, what a great look at, you know, she came over to talk to the firefighter, all the stuff that everybody read, you know, grew up reading those kids books happens. But back to the perception, you know, I remember telling you about the video, and I've actually showed it to you. Chief Tom Freeman, one of my mentors and good friends, okay, Chief and Lyle Woodridge, old Evergreen Park guy, Southside Chicago, Southsider, Chief and Lyle Woodridge Fire District on the west side of Chicago for 25 years, Elmhurst, Illinois Fire Chief, great, great fire ground commander, great, truly great guy. I remember, John, he called me, he's like 6 in the morning, he's at my office, I was a training chief in Darien Woodridge, he's like, where you at? I'm at your office. I go, I'm on the way. He goes, get here, I got to show you this damn video. I walk in. He's got a, remember the old VHS tapes, the old tapes? He's got one of those in his hands. You got to see this. So he was like just out of his mind. He pushes it, pops it in the video player, and it's this decent-sized two-story home in another part of the country. Lady came home, homeowner. She parked in her garage inside, probably unloading groceries, whatever she's doing, take care, you know, managing, you know, and all of a sudden you have fire blowing out the garage, fire blowing out the attached garage. And then you see the volley pull up in his personal car, then an engine. Doesn't matter, volley career, they've all done. Oh, my, John, the fire, what they did from deck gunning to steaming each other to burning, they burnt the house down. It was a car on fire in the garage. And if you fast forward to the end, there is not a roof on the house, but there's one point where they're no longer going inside. And it's going pretty good. And this is how they're venting the second floor windows in the front of the building. You can imagine how many people. Now, this is being videotaped, John, by one of the neighbors. And she's not being too nice. Oh, look at this. Oh, look at that. They can't. But so you know how they start venting the windows. I show you this video. They start throwing their pike poles, their hooks, like their javelins. They're throwing them like to break the. And I'm watching this and I'm going, oh, my God. And then while this is going on, this big, probably 6'6", 6'7" tall firefighter, just in his bunker pants, he's obviously tired, forgets there's a cast 1,000 behind him with cameras. He lays down in the street on his side, puts his hand like on the side of his head, like props it up like he's on his living room floor watching a movie. And she, the commentary that's coming, oh, I'm like, so much so, excuse me, so much so, one of the firefighters comes over to her neighbor, and now, well, this is all gone. She's saying, aren't you glad you live in a brick house? Oh, blah, 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 blah. Oh my God, I thought they're supposed to put them out. And so there's a guy next door, and this lady videotaped, points the camera, and you see him. And she goes, what does he want? And the lady says, he wants to know if we have any water. She goes, yeah, tell him it's $100 a gallon. Now, they gave him some water, the neighbors, but you know the commentary you hear sometimes, and this was actually pretty clean for what we hear nowadays. But I've shown that video in hopes not to embarrass anybody, only to say, here's about 9 things you should never do at a fire that is going to paint you in a horrible, horrible, you know, picture with things. Now, so we've been talking public perception, John. flip it now. Let's talk expectations. All right. So we've both coached and counseled firefighters on what they consider as busy, exciting runs and the more mundane, not so exciting runs, you know, the big call, small call, nuisance call, whatever. You know, I had that conversation with a firefighter about picking up the old lady who fell for the second time this week. Excuse me, I swallowed my coffee wrong. That they consider that a nuisance when actually going to pick her up isn't as much a nuisance as it is, I always consider, a blessing. And let me explain. This came into play just recently, John. My dad, as you know, passed away on Father's Day. Excuse me. And prior to that passing, you know, he had had his cancer, and he was at my cousin's house, Grand Chute, Wisconsin. All right, kind of close to Appleton, you know, that area, Grand Chute. And I'm telling you, the guys and gals there treated my dad like he was their own dad. I mean, he's in a lot of pain. He's like, I remember when I was there and we were trying to pick him up to move him, to change him and stuff and clean. I mean, and he could get pretty vocal. They treated him. My cousin said they brought her to tears. How sweet, and not that this wasn't Rick Lasky's dad. They were taking care of any of their citizens. And that's if you know the chief there, John, the chief in Grand Chute, Wisconsin, if you know the assistant chiefs, the deputies, I met one of them, I met her, their firefighters I met. My cousin couldn't wait to bring like trays of brownies and cookies, and now she wants to make them stuff. Because I think they had made like three visits to take care of my dad. And one, he fell. The other one, getting about, you know, just and you know, and I know they were there once before for a smoke detector battery. And I'll tell you this: forget that her cousin's a fire chief, a firefighter. My cousin Sharon Stanlick, who's sweet, absolutely sweet. She is like, if Grand Chute, Wisconsin has the ultimate fire fan, she is their ultimate fire fan. She tells everybody in that town, all her neighbors, how great that fire department, and those were the experiences. You know, some people are even hesitant, right? They're hesitant to call the fire. I don't want to bother them. I don't want to wake them up. Because one of them was, it was 3 a.m. You know, what do I do? You know, we've always said it, call us. And when you get, you've been there, well, you've seen firefighters. I have, and I've straightened that stuff out of heartbeat, where they treat one of these seniors like they're a nuisance. I'm not talking about the people that abuse the system, and they're out there, but it's still your job to go take care of them. But to treat someone's mom or grandma or grandpa like they were a nuisance, and I know you as a chief, I know how you feel about that, but I know I went on about, and I'll just send it out there. If I haven't said already, thank you to the Grand Chute, Wisconsin, like I said, outside Appleton Fire Department for, like I said, they knew towards the end it was my dad. They had no idea the first couple of times that was my dad, which it shouldn't matter. So what I'm saying is, it wasn't like, this is Chief Salka's dad. If they were next door at my cousin Sharon's neighbor's house, they'd be treating them the same way. That's their MO. That's their fire department. And they've made hundreds of more fans because my cousin tells everybody about how wonderful her, not their fire department in town, she calls them her fire department, her firefighters. I just think, John, sometimes we miss these opportunities when it comes to perception, but expectations-wise, to really meet the expectations we told them we were going to do.
You know, I've had that discussion with guys in a firehouse. You know, when I was a captain of 48 engine, I had some young fellas there, but I had a lot of senior people there too, and the truck was very senior. And we used to have this conversation about, listen, enjoying what we do. You never work a day in your life if you love what you do. And what do you want to be when you grow up, a fireman? Oh, no, you can't do both. You can't grow up and be a fireman. You know, we have all these jokes about how much fun our job is and how much we love doing it. And that's great. But you know what? Sometimes, once again, people take it a little bit too literally to the point that they think like that they really don't have to do stuff they don't like to do because that's not fun. That's not really what I was looking for. Well, you know what? and I don't want to sound, I don't want to sound too cold. I've been accused of that, but
no,
we're not here for you. We're not here for you. And I just love it that you love being here. And I just love it that, you know, guys don't call in sick and they won't tap out with a little minor injury that in any other occupation, they'd run home and stop at the doctor on the way home to get an extra day off. We're so thrilled that people love what they do and come in early and stay late and fix stuff. And we love that. But sometimes the work is tough.
Well, let me throw this at you. Let me throw this one at you, because I think this is a great little story that stresses just what we're talking about. You're the captain of 48 engine. Never, ever, 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 as you would say, did I say ever? Ever dip below 6,000 runs a year. Fires, good jobs all day long. All this stuff. And then tell the story again. FDNY switches to start doing more EMS runs.
Great story. I just happened to be a captain at the time when the FDNY officially took over EMS. And we did that because the mayor, Rudy Giuliani, and he did it not just to EMS and fire, but he did it to police as well. He eliminated some agencies, and he disbanded New York City EMS, which is a separate agency, and then he just slid them right over into the fire department as a new bureau. So we get the Bureau of Fire, and we get the Bureau of EMS. He did the same thing with the police department. There was the New York City Police Department, NYPD. Then there was the New York City Housing Police Department. There was the New York City Transit Police Department. He eliminated them. They disappeared. They have separate patches, different color vehicles, and everything. He eliminated the both of those departments and absorbed them into the NYPD as the Housing Bureau and the Transit Bureau. And they're all ordinary cops wearing the same uniform. Anyway, so there I am in the fire department. We already did EMS. We did car crashes. We did whatever you called us for. You pulled the red box, we showed up, two or three or four of us, or one of us, depending on what time of day it was, meaning one engine. But suddenly now we're going to be an official arm of EMS. Suddenly we're going for training. We're getting defibrillators on our engines. We're getting first aid training, advanced first aid training on all the engines, right? Eventually it's spread to the truck as well. CFRD, Certified First Responders. And you know what? Before you know it, we're getting patches sewn on our coats with the, like you said, the snake on a stick, right? Guys are starting to worry. Guys are coming up, hey, Cap, what are we going to do? This is, I mean, we're doing 6,000 runs a year. We're doing fires all the time. Cap, we're going to miss fires. We're going to miss first due runs. We're going to be out on EMS calls doing Band-Aid runs, and there's going to be a fire that we're going to miss. I said, you know what? You're right. Really? And what are we going to do about it? I said, we're going to go to the Band-Aid call. We're going to go to the medical call. We're going to go to whatever kind of call we get sent on. I said, this is 48 Engine. They've been here a long, long time. They've been doing great, great work here. They turn out fast. They do quality work. They come back. They go right back in service. And whether we're doing EMS calls, whether we're doing building inspection, whether we're doing fires, we're going to do high-quality work here. I said, first of all, don't worry about the numbers. Any run you miss because you're on an EMS call, you're going to pick one up because 75 engines are going to be on an EMS call 2 hours from now, and their run's going to come in, and they're not going to be available, and we're going to get assigned. So don't worry about missing runs because you're probably going to either do the same or do more. That's number one. Number two, the most important thing is when we roll out this door, we do quality work. We're 48 engine. We want to be top of the line. We're going to roll out fast. We're going to get there quickly. We're going to treat people well. Even people that you know, really, this guy looks like he's been like this for like a month. And now he's calling us at 2 o'clock in the morning. Guess what? We're not happy about it, but we're going to do it. And you know what? It didn't make them feel really better, but at least I explained to them what was expected of them. Sometimes some of the things you do are not all fun and games. Sometimes things are a little serious. Sometimes things are even stuff you don't like doing, you know.
Well, and I like how you told them, you know, we're 48 engine. We're great at doing fires. We're great at doing
extra company pride, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And you said, you know what? We're going to be great at everything. And I've said it for years. You can't pick and choose what you can be great at.
Right.
You know, and I don't want to be just okay. I'm too competitive to be just okay. I want us to be the best.
And when I was the captain of 48 Engine, I'll tell you right here, and you can repeat it, there wasn't a better engine in the Bronx than 48 Engine. And you know what? 75 engines should think the same thing, and 67 engines should think the same thing, and 42 Engine. They're all great places. Everybody should think, man, we ought to catch me out. Ain't nobody better than us. Everybody should think that, and I did, and I tried to maintain that attitude with my guys, with my firefighters as well.
Well, big calls, small calls, it doesn't matter. Nuisance calls, whatever. If you're in this just for the exciting stuff, you're gonna get bored really quick. You know, take every call as an opportunity you know, whether you're putting your air pack on, your gear, whatever, you know, the public, you know. And lastly here, John, as we start moving towards closing this one out, you know, again, you can't pick and choose what you can be great at. Last two things here. We talked about the perception, and that's being dressed and ready and geared up and looking like you're professionals or bringing your tools with you and not looking like a sloppy clown or whatever, and that kind of stuff. You know, we've seen people in their uniforms that look, their boots are flipped out, white socks, short, you know, their hats on backwards like they're playing baseball. And I'm like, really, that's what you want the public to think of you? You know, again, I'm not talking you have to be like all prim and proper like some places do, but your uniform should look good. Your uniform should look clean and be decent and be well kept, and you should be wearing the right stuff. And if you get off the rig, you should have your turnout gear on and your pad ready. You get off and go, God, look at our firefighters. Look how professional they are. Our firefighters, they always look like they know what they're doing. Talk briefly here at the end. We'll talk about expectations, because we've been talking public perception, expectations, merging them, response times. I mean, the public expects – now, it's always been the norm has been, it took you 20 minutes to get here. That's what I said. It took you 20 minutes. Everybody's at 20. It's not 20 minutes, but response times are huge when it comes to the expectations the public has for fire department, right?
Right. And everybody, you know, everybody's got an opinion on this, and there's a lot of factors that, that affect response times, that affect, you know, whether you're going to get there quickly or not. And they're all not controllable. Some of them are. You know, the ones that are controllable and pretty famous and well-known now is how quick you turn out in the firehouse, in the station. From the time you know you have a run till the time you roll out the door, that's the most critical piece of timing for a response. Once you hit the road, there could be traffic, there could be accidents, there could be snow, there could be rain. You could normally be second due when you're going first due, which means a longer distance because the first due engine's unavailable. So all those things are variable. What's not variable is beep, boop, engine goes. That's a run at 48 engine for the engine only, and you should be moving. Now, even better is in the FDNY, and everybody's got a different response sort of like sequence, a different response thing that goes on when a run comes in. In a New York City Fire Department, you get beep, boop, you get a tone alert like a lot of places do. Remember all the way back to squad 50 run, right? They had the tones, right? You get beep, boop. Now, sometimes there's a delay. Sometimes you hear the computer going, but you don't hear the voice yet. There's a built-in electronic voice that says engine, ladder, battalion, or any one of them, or any two of them. It's not always all three units. Obviously, in 42 engine, they get a run, it's 42 engine. There's only one engine in quarter. So they're moving the minute they get a run because they know it's for them. And my point always was everybody should be moving. The minute they hear beep, before the second tone even comes in, everybody should be moving. But what happens if it's not for us, Chief? The truck guy says. What happens if it's not for us? Oh, then you wasted all that fuel and energy walking to the apparatus floor, and then you get to turn back around. But if it is for you, guess what you just did? You saved that woman who's having a heart attack, or that child who's trapped in a vehicle somewhere, or the people whose house is on fire. You saved them 20 seconds. 20 seconds, that's nothing. Well, I learned that in a class, which I'll tell another time, another story.
It is if you're not breathing.
That's not your 20 seconds to waste. That's that 20 seconds belongs to them, to the victims, to the caller, to the citizens. You know, so I always said the minute a run comes in, everybody who's on duty in that station should be disengaging from what they're doing and moving towards the apparatus floor for a run. And then when it says engine only, then the truck guys and the chief can turn around and go back to
well,
there.
In 20 seconds, John. So let's picture that's your kid or your husband or your wife who's already not breathing or having difficult, and now you're going to lump another 20 seconds on to, they're, like you said, they're not our seconds.
Unacceptable. Unacceptable. Response times are vital. They're important. Everybody, you know, anybody wants to make it up on the road, blasting a horn and going on the wrong side of the road, and there's time and place for that. That's why we're allowed to go through red lights. That's why we're allowed to exceed the speed limit. But you can't go pedal to the metal and not worry about either safety of the folks that are on the rig with you and the safety of the folks that are crossing the street with a carriage or the mom and dad that are just driving across the intersection with their 3-year-old son in the back coming home from school. All of a sudden you have an accident with them. I've always been very critical of police that do these high speed chases for a guy that doesn't stop or for a guy who's got a back taillight out. I know technically and statistically, a lot of them end up being wanted for something more serious. But some of these chases you see, you say, man, oh, man, about 100 people had their lives threatened during that chase. And it ends up being a kid that's nervous because he got a suspended license. You know? And we should be and we are responsible for the same exact thing, for maintaining the safety of our crews and the safety of the public surrounding us.
Yep.
Oh, so response times are huge. You know, again, we've been talking public perception and expectations. What you do to promote our image in a positive way, because it reflects on all capital letters and all of us. What they do in your department, John, and where your chief, Sal Blooming Grove, all right, in Orange County, New York, reflects on what they do in Louisville, Texas, reflects on what they do, you know, in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, or, you know, in Snohomish, you know, County, Washington. It doesn't matter. The public looks at all the firefighters as the same. How you take care of your rigs, how you keep your stuff clean, your firehouses. I told you this, the Wichita West Volunteer Fire Department, Ryan Fetzer's group here. I thought about it last night, John, at drill night. I'm leaving and it's nighttime and the firehouse, they just, you know how it is. Everything's funds and fundraisers with values because it's hard budget-wise, right? They just repainted their whole firehouse, red doors, and it looks incredible. It was like literally night and day. You could drive by before, you could see it, but it been and the pride they took in doing that. And now everybody that drives by it, you see it, it stands out, it looks great. And that's like if it's a 30-year-old engine you have in your department. You know, you and I've been there where we've seen brand new fire engines look like crap, and fire departments, they have 25, 30-year-old rigs. They look like they just rolled off the showroom floor because in the firehouses, 100-year-old firehouse that's a little stressed over the years.
We got dozens of 100-year-old firehouses.
And walk into 88 engine. Oh, my God, 88 engine, 38 truck. Great, beautiful, clean, looking, great firehouse. It all depends on who's working there. So, folks, you've got a chance to paint it all in a positive light. Please do for us. Any closing thoughts, buddy, or are you good?
Nothing good. It's just good information, something that we don't talk about a lot, public perception. But I think it's important for those of us that are riding the front seat and those of us that are in leadership positions to try and always maintain a positive image for our job, because you never know when the city leaders are going to be looking to cut staffing or cut firehouses or whatever it might be. And then suddenly the folks who we have a good reputation with will come to our aid, you know.
Show up and help us, exactly. So, hey, well, folks, we hope that was a good topic for you. I know it's very close and dear to our hearts about public perception expectations, what we do to paint that positive image for the fire service out there. Thank you to those. So many of you do a great job making us all look great. Especially with everything going on with COVID right now, you've been professional. You've been incredible. Thank you from both Chief Salk and myself. Hey, we're on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We've got our website. You can find us there. John, good email address for you.
ChiefJohnSalka@gmail.com.
And I'm ChiefLasky@gmail.com. We ask you, and when we close all of our shows, to please keep the men and women in armed forces in your thoughts and prayers. And right now, more than ever, please keep our brothers and sisters, you know, and our law enforcement family. We always have brothers or sisters in blue. We talk about them. Hey, they need us more than ever. Tons and tons of great law enforcement folks out there. Remember them. Take care of them. You know, if you're a firefighter, have them for lunch, have them for dinner, cup of coffee, whatever. Take care of our other half of our family. And remember, folks, we always close with this. Remember, never forgetting means just that, never forgetting. Be safe. God bless you. And we'll catch you next time on the Command Post.